The Time Traveler's Guide to Not Getting Caught. Chapter 15. That Time I Freed the African Americans. Okay, look. This objective wasn't on my buddy's list of things he wanted to change in history. Now, I'm not saying my buddy is racist. I just don't think he went back to that time and screwed anything up. So you don't remember this, but in our original history, slavery in America was legal until 1960. But there was almost a civil war in 1860 over ending it. But it never took hold. So when the babysitter told me she wanted to free all the slaves in America, she pointed to 1860 as being the best possible time to make it happen. So yes, I started the Civil War. And yes, I'm responsible for a lot of people dying. And yes, I watched Cold Mountain when I got back home from 1860 America. And yes, I did enjoy it. Do I feel bad for starting a war that led to tens of thousands of people dying? I mean, look, I didn't personally see them all die, but because I freed the African Americans 100 years earlier than the original history, we wound up getting a lot of really good music and entertainment. So whereas those deaths don't really affect my everyday life, having freed the African Americans earlier gives me, and all of us, a lot more entertainment. And you know, it also gives justice to like 13% of the population. So I asked the babysitter where we should go to ignite the Civil War, and she tells me that in 1860 South Carolina, the state legislature was set to vote on seceding from the Union, but they ultimately decided to stay, and so Lincoln wasn't able to abolish slavery, and that she felt if South Carolina had seceded, that other states would have followed, and a war would have broken out. It was at this point of time that I felt a little emasculated, because I realized that the babysitter thought she was smarter than me. Or is it then I? Then I? Then me? God, now I'm just second-guessing myself on everything because of her! And I found myself a little less attracted to her. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was still attracted to her. I was just not as attracted as I was before. Anyway, before we head to 1860, we needed to go back to the costume shop and get whatever stupid stuff they were wearing back then. Look, you should know, I'm a little bitter thinking about this adventure, and it has nothing to do with what our mission was. It's just that the babysitter was so smug about her knowing about all of this history stuff, and I could just tell she didn't think I was as smart as her. So any sort of resentment on my part has absolutely nothing to do with freeing the slaves, but rather, everything to do with my relationship with the babysitter. So we get to the costume shop, and we buy stupid 1860 clothes, and we get into the backseat of my car, and yada yada yada. We were suddenly in South Carolina a day before the legislature was set to vote on secession. My first thought about South Carolina in 1860 was that it was super clean. And that's when I realized that history was so much cleaner than the present, and we should really do something about that. My second thought was, holy shit! Is that a slave auction happening right over there? The babysitter and I walk down the street, where we see a stage set up with several African American people in chains. And then on the stage was an old white guy who was calling the slaves up to get auctioned. And then this super strong looking African gets on stage, and there's this huge bidding war, and I'm thinking, God, this is awful. Just awful, you know? Putting a price on a human being. But then my second thought was, well, does this guy feel good at all that so many people are bidding on him? And then I wondered how I would feel if I were being auctioned. I mean, I'd probably feel awful. Just awful. But I'd feel even more awful if nobody wanted to bid on me. Or if I got sold for a low price. Like, what are they all bidding on? Was it just pure strength? That didn't seem fair because I'm sure I'd get a lot stronger after doing a lot of manual labor. Like, did any of them think to bid on potential or one's personality? It was all disgustingly superficial, if you ask me. So then after this guy is sold, a woman gets brought on stage, and now I'm wondering if women go for more or less than the men? But my question is soon answered as she gets sold for a significantly lower price. And now I'm thinking, man, not only is this time period racist, but it's also sexist. Once again, women are worth less than men. And that's when I realize that I was missing out on the big picture. These people had just come from Africa and had no idea what any of the people were saying, so there was no way any of them could be offended by any of the bidding. That's when I look over at the babysitter and I can see her crying. And I'm wondering if she's thinking the same thing as me. Or is it as I? As me? As I? Ah! But then I figured she probably wasn't thinking what I was thinking. And then I started to wonder if that meant she wasn't my soulmate. I mean, is your soulmate supposed to be thinking the same thing as you? Certainly not all the time. But I would think if you go back in time and are watching a slave auction with your soulmate that she'd have the same thought as you. And then I start to wonder if I actually love the babysitter, or if it had just all been infatuation that had built up over the years. If I was going to be perfectly honest, we didn't really have that much in common. So I was considering dumping her, but what would be a good time to do it? If I dumped her now, then I wouldn't have to exert all my energy on freeing the African Americans. But you never want to break up with someone while you're traveling together. So I decide that I would wait until after we freed an entire ethnicity. But then I thought about it some more and I realized that it would be foolish to break up with the babysitter just because she wasn't thinking the exact thing I was thinking during a slave auction in 1860 South Carolina. Then I thought, I have the ability to meet any woman throughout time. Did I really want to resort to a person who is just so fundamentally different than I? Than me? Than I? Than me? But then I realized I couldn't just win over any girl from any time, because I wouldn't be able to bring her back to my time period because the machine wouldn't let me bring anyone into their future. So I'd have to pick someone to fall in love with in a time that had more advanced technology than CD players. I needed some guidance, and I was seriously considering getting some therapy after this. I mean, in this point of time, I could travel back to Freud and ask him for help, but then he'd tell me I wanted to sleep with my mom or something like that, and I just didn't want to open up that whole can of worms. But first thing first. Freeing these people. Now, I didn't think the babysitter's plan was all that great, but I was way too lazy and apparently too dumb to think of a better plan. She essentially wanted us to make sure that South Carolina seceded from the Union, which would then start a war and force the end of slavery in America. So I turned to the babysitter, since she's so superior to me, and I ask her how we're supposed to get the state legislature to vote for secession, and she says there's an influential guy in the city right now that would be able to convince everyone. And I ask what his name is, and she says, Jefferson Davis. And I'm like, never heard of him. And she says, few people have. And I say, okay, let me lead the way. So I start walking through the city shouting, Jefferson Davis, Jefferson Davis, anyone seen Jefferson Davis? And the babysitter stops me like I'm some sort of idiot and says that he would probably be at the state legislature right now. And I say, well, okay, why don't you take us to the state legislature then? And she looks at me like I'm some resentful guy that's upset at her because she knows more about history than me, than I. And that's when I see that look in her eyes. You know the look? It's a look that says, I better not get in a fight with this guy because he might abandon me in 1860 South Carolina. That look. And that's when I tell her, I'd never abandon you in 1860 South Carolina. And then she acts like that wasn't exactly what she was thinking. And she says, I never thought you would. And I say, good, because I never would abandon you somewhere in history. And she says she knows I never would do that. And then our first fight ended just as quickly as it began. So we start heading through the city, but apparently Miss Genius didn't know how to get to the state legislature. So she has to ask someone for directions, and apparently it was just down the street. So we start heading there, and all around the city, there are just a bunch of slaves, just everywhere. And I'll tell you this, it got me thinking a lot about people and our desire to have control over other human beings. Like, what was the main joy out of all of this? Was it just the free labor? Or was it something more? Was it knowing that there was a subclass of people that they can never fall below? Because if someone's below you on the food chain, then you have a better chance of surviving. I mean, nobody wants to be at the bottom. But then I realized that once I get back home, none of this really matters because slavery didn't exist anymore, and frankly, I didn't see any purpose in thinking any deeper on the subject. So the babysitter and I are walking through the city, and she reaches out towards me like she wants to hold my hand as we walk, and I'm really not wanting to do it at this moment. But I figured if I didn't, I would never hear the end of it. So I clasp her hand, but now I'm thinking, well, this is a terrible way of walking because there isn't any freedom in any movement, which basically made me a slave. Despite the awkward walking, we get to the legislature building and it's a beautiful structure with columns and stairs, and I'm thinking, this is nice. And that's when I see a guy whip a slave and yell at him to move faster, and then I thought, this definitely isn't that nice. But to be fair, it would have been nice if it weren't for all the slaves and cruelty. So we're standing at the bottom of the steps, and the babysitter looks at me and asks me how we're going to find Jefferson Davis. And now I'm thinking, oh, does the big smart babysitter need my help even though I have a much tinier brain than her? Than she? Her? She? So then I do the only thing I know how to do to find a famous historical figure. I clear my throat and I yell, Jefferson Davis? And a nearby guy looks over at us and yells, what do you want, you bastard bitch? And I gotta say, I've been called a lot of things in my life, not only in my journeys through time, but also by those prepubescent girls who stole my bike. But I had never been called a bastard bitch before, and it kinda hurt my feelings. It wasn't so much the combination of bastard bitch, but it was the way he said it. He was just so angry at me. I mean, nobody had been that angry at me before. For some reason, I wanted to cry. But I couldn't let this guy see me cry because he might call me a bastard bitch again. And then who knows what I'd do if I were called a bastard bitch twice by this guy. So I clear my throat and I look at him and I ask, are you Jefferson Davis or just some sort of bastard bitch? And he gets really close to me, like Socrates close, and his breath smelled like beef and slavery. And he says, what do you want, you Nancy boy? And that's when I start crying. Now you might think it was just the Nancy boy, or that it was a combination of Nancy boy with bastard bitch, or that it was my discovering that the babysitter wasn't the love of my life, or maybe there's just something about traveling through time that causes people to cry. Maybe this wasn't even my fault. Maybe it was just some sort of medical problem. So I cry, and that's when the babysitter puts her hand on my back and I'm thinking, please don't console me or this guy's gonna call me some other mean thing. And then he says, stop crying, you sodomite. I'm Jefferson Davis. What do you want? And believe me when I say, I wanted to stop crying, but I just wasn't capable of stopping. So the babysitter has to step in and she asks Jefferson Davis his thoughts on secession. And he says he can only talk about secession over a drink. And that's when the tears stop flowing and I say, but it's 9 a.m. And then he gives me a look like he's gonna call me something else. And I say, please, sir, I'm sorry. Let's just go get drunk. Now, by this time, I didn't care that I wasn't looking manly in front of the babysitter because I felt like maybe if I showed her I wasn't as manly as she thought I was, that maybe she would be the one to break up with me. And everyone knows the best way to break up with someone is to have them break up with you first. So yeah, I was just trying to survive at this point of time, and I knew that my survival depended on Jefferson Davis not being so mean to me. So we head to a local pub where Jefferson Davis gets a whiskey, and I ask for a milk because I'm just not even trying to appear to be anything other than I am, which is a Nancy boy, a bastard, bitch, sodomite. So I get my milk and I start sipping on it as the babysitter subtly broaches Jefferson Davis on his thoughts about secession. And he says that he used to be for it because he thought Lincoln would free the slaves, but now he didn't believe that Lincoln would be able to do it, so it wasn't worth seceding over. So the babysitter tries her best to convince him that South Carolina needs to secede, but despite her best efforts, he isn't even listening to her. And I'm just gonna say it. I think he wasn't listening to her because she's a woman and Jefferson Davis is a misogynist. There, I said it. Now, I don't know for a fact that he is, but the babysitter was making some good points and it was just going in one ear and out the other. And that's when I realized I needed to step in if we were ever going to convince him to push for secession. So I say, I just came from Washington, D.C., and I overheard Lincoln talking about wanting to abolish slavery, but he wanted to wait until South Carolina voted to stay in the Union before he made his move. And Jefferson Davis looks at me and says, why would I believe someone who cries in front of another man? And you know what? I didn't really have a good answer for him. And his just asking me made me want to cry again. So I took a sip of milk and I collected my thoughts. And then, after several seconds, I look up at him and I say, what are you? Some sort of Nancy boy or something? And he looks at me like I just called his mother a whore. And that's when I was waiting for him to pull out his dueling glove and slap me. So I prepare myself to dive out of the way, when instead he eyes me and he says he wants some sort of proof. And that's when I had had enough. Can a sentence have two hads in a row? Had had enough? That's when I had enough. I had enough of this asshole who thought he could just go around being racist and sexist and making grown men cry in front of women they're dating. So I decide I'm gonna jump up on this stool and give a speech. But the stool was higher up than I thought, and so I had like a lot of trouble getting up on it, which was like totally bad. But finally, after needing help from the babysitter to get me atop the stool, I start to recite dialogue from all of the inspirational sports movies I had ever seen. And because I was a lazy bastard bitch Nancy boy sodomite with a bunch of free time, I had seen a lot of those movies. So I said everything from those movies that I could remember, with some tweaks, of course. So I say, "Great moments are born from great opportunity, and that's what we have here tonight, boys. That's what you earned here tonight. One vote. If we vote 10 times, we might not succeed 9 times, but not this time. Not today. Today, we leave the Union because we can. Today, we are the greatest hockey team in the world. You were meant to be here today. This is your time. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the North has. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it." And then people around the pub start to gather around, but Jefferson Davis is still giving me the dead face, so I know I have to push harder. So I continue and I say, "We're not goons. We're not bullies. We have to be ourselves. We're Team USA, gathered from across the South, and we're gonna stick together. And you know why? Because we are the South. And ducks fly together." And then more people gather around, so I continue my epic speech and I say, "3 minutes till the biggest battle of our professional lives all comes down to today. And either we heal as a team, or we're gonna crumble. Inch by inch, play by play until we're finished. We're in hell right now, gentlemen. We can stay here and get the shit kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light and we can climb out of hell one inch at a time. Now what are you gonna do? Quack. Quack, 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 quack." Now, I don't know why I quacked right there, but I was still thinking about the Mighty Duck speech earlier, and I felt it would have a strong impact at the moment. And then I finished with, "I don't want them to gain another yard. You blitz all night. You make sure they remember forever the night they played the Titans." And then I started a slow clap. Now, I know you're not supposed to start a slow clap for yourself, but I don't think any of them knew what a slow clap was, and I really needed to end my speech with one, so I did it anyway. And then other people start to join in. Everybody does, all but Jefferson Davis. And I felt like he just needed one more inspirational thing, so I thought of the most inspirational quote I could think of. I say, "There's no crying in baseball." And then a toothless guy at the bar shouts, "There's no crying in baseball." And then another ugly dude shouts out, "There's no crying in baseball." And then Jefferson Davis stands and looks me in the eyes and nods and says, "There's no crying in baseball." And then Jefferson Davis storms out of the pub and he rushes over to the legislature to convince everyone to secede. I carefully get down from the stool and I take a big swig from my milk and I wipe away the mustache and I thought, would a Nancy boy, bastard bitch, sodomite be able to convince Jefferson Davis to secede? So I look over at the babysitter and she simply gives me a nod and tells me what I did was great and I say, thanks. And then I'm about to tell her we should break up because I was feeling so inspired by my plagiarized speech that I wanted to end things when she suddenly stops me and says, "I've had a lot of fun and I would love to continue traveling through time with you, but I think it's best if I stayed here and helped free all of the African Americans." And I say, "Really? You want to stay here? They don't even have CD players." And she says she doesn't care about any of that and that she knows this is her purpose in life. And I ask her if she wants to say goodbye to her family or anything, but she tells me she doesn't even like them or have any friends. And then I say, "Well, okay then. I guess I'll just leave you here and that'll be that." And she tells me what a great companion I've been. And she thanks me for helping start a war to free the African Americans. And I say, "No problem," even though it was a bit of a problem. And then she says goodbye. And I look at her deep into her beautiful doe eyes and I ask her, "Do you want to make love one last time?" And she says, "No." And I'm thinking, I just went back in time and started a war for you and you can't even have sex with me? I mean, That just seemed really rude. And that's when I felt happy I was abandoning her in the South in a time with no air conditioning. So I put in the date in tubes and then I went back to the present. Now I gotta say, the moment I got back home, I felt really good. Like a giant weight had been lifted off of my shoulders. Not because I freed the African Americans, but because I broke up with the babysitter. And now I didn't ever have to go back to 2010 again. So I take my shoes off and I lay back on my couch and I watch Cold Mountain and I thought, not only did I free the slaves, but I also gave society this glorious movie. But then I had to figure out what to do next. I had already gone back in time to meet my favorite historical figures, and I had righted what once was wronged, and I had biffed Tannen my bank account, and I took my girlfriend on vacation to various times throughout history. But what was I going to do now? I mean, what did I want to do? I could go to the Titanic and meet up with my buddy, but I figured I should probably fix a few more things on his list before I did that. But I was so spent from freeing the Jews and African Americans that I wanted to do something a little more relaxing. And that's when it hit me. It's exactly what I needed. I would go back to August 15th, 1969, to Bethel, New York. I would go to Woodstock. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe and rate the podcast to help me get more of the positive attention I so sorely need. Follow the show on Instagram at Time Traveler's Guide Podcast and me at Anonymous Time Traveler 69. New episodes out Thursday nights at 8.